the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Lindsay Stevenson is the Chief Transformation Officer at BPM, one of the top 35 accounting and advisory firms in the U.S. and a certified B Corp. She has been named twice to the 25 most powerful women in accounting by the AICPA and twice to the top 40 under 40 accounting professionals by the CPA Practice Advisor. Lindsay discusses the transformation occurring across the business world, including emerging technologies and the next generation's approach to life.
Hey, Andrew, can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm good. I'm trying to get my poop in a group.
Getting situated. So awesome. Well, thanks for hanging out today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And is it hot over there?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
It's so hot.
We've gotten a little bit of relief here, but it's been good lake weather. Let's say that.
Oh, that's good. We have my husband has the golf club that we're in has this invitational thing that they do every year. So it's a member guest. You invite someone that isn't a club member and they bring their wives. And it's like this whole thing for 3 days. And it was last week. They were like, it's going to be like 96, 97, 98. I'm like, oh my gosh. So now it looks like it's going to be like 86, 88, 80. So like, I mean, it'll be hot, but better than 90s, right?
No kidding. Any relief is welcome at this point. So, well, awesome. Let me ask a question first. Your title is Chief Transformation Officer. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's evolving always. But I do everything. Well, it's maybe easier to start with the teams that report to me. So the PMO reports into transformation. So our project management group, and then we have the data governance and business intelligence team reports into my group. And then we have the change management team that reports into my group, and then transformation as a whole. So anytime, like as a firm, like this morning, our CEO pinged me and said, we want to figure out how to create the time, space, and support for our practice group leaders to run fantastic teams. So then we take that and work through what would that look like? What all has to be true? What would we need to do? What would we have to shift? What would it take for mindsets? What would it take for processes? What would it take for behaviors? And then we start mapping out, like, how do we get to that transformational outcome? So that's the transformation part.
That's fascinating because, and we'll get more to it later. I'm going off script here, but there are a lot of things happening, re-envisioning our profession in a lot of ways, how the firms are structured and functioned. I mean, we have private equity coming in, you know, a new, and I'm always hesitant to paint a generation with a broad brush, but, you know, different expectations from, you know, this next generation that's coming in at the staff level. So we'll get to that. That's awesome. But let's go back. We'll go back on script and let's go back to the beginning. So I believe you are from Spokane originally.
I am. Oh, gee. Yeah.
From the big time. I love it. And so talk to me, how'd you end up at Gonzaga? How'd you end up in accounting?
You know, I mean, it's a winding path. So I went to Meade High School, big North Sider, grew up on the North Side. So my first, I mean, you sort of know who Gonzaga is, right? If you grow up in Spokane, you know, the university, but at the time when I was younger, it was a law school. Like that's what it was known as. Even locally, that was the loss. If you want to be a lawyer, you go to Gonzaga. And I don't know that, at least for me, I didn't know really anything about sports. I wasn't really connected to what was happening at the university. And then I had a bunch of friends that went to Gonzaga Prep. So there was always that connection point of like, oh, those kids go to Gonzaga probably. I have no idea if they actually do or don't. But in my head as a kid, Gonzaga Prep, you go to Gonzaga. So growing up in Spokane, it was really, you know, those early days, the Cinderella days, that was the big, oh man, Gonzaga is so cool because of basketball. So that started sort of everybody fangirling out over GU and, oh, it would be cool to go there, look at this basketball program. And then a couple of kids that I went to high school with, right, ended up playing there. So then that was really exciting. But in terms of my own path, I don't know that Gonzaga was ever on the radar, only because when I was in high school, I was convinced that I was going to be a Broadway musical star. Also, I would be a cardiac pediatrician.
Perfect.
So, you know, Gonzaga didn't have a med school, and you know, I didn't know where I was going to have to go to some big school to get both of those things, because I was convinced I could do both things.
Totally.
So yeah. So, and then fast forward to right after I graduated from my senior year and I got pregnant, and I was like, oh, okay, so my life is going to change and I'm not going to do those things. So now what am I going to do with myself? So I took a year off from school and had my baby. And probably within the first month of looking at his sweet little face, that when he's in kindergarten and they ask, what does your mommy do? I really don't want him to say she works in fast food, which is what I was doing at the time. So I pulled my bootstraps up and started at Sioux Falls Community College, decided I was going to just go get some classes and started there. And I, you know, just, you take like business 101, accounting 101, you just start taking classes, right? Cause you have no idea what you're going to do with my, with your life. And I had an accounting 101 professor that by day was an accountant and by night was teaching these adjunct classes. And, he made life seem so normal. And I was so not normal at the time. I was 19 and had a baby and was trying to go to school and was working, I think, at Hollywood Video by then. I don't even know what I was doing. And he was just so down to earth, and he made it seem so accessible. And I was reasonably not awful at accounting, so I could get through the material. And I thought, oh, maybe this is something I could do. And then there was the mother of my ex-husband was an accountant, not a CPA, but she was an accountant, and she was working for the public radio station as the CFO. Okay. And she said, have you ever thought about accounting? And I said, no, it seems boring. And she said, I don't think it's boring, but I probably can't convince you. I will tell you that you'll have nothing but flexibility. And that seemed pretty great for the position that I was in. So, yeah. So life ended up, I had another kid, graduated from community college. I took my last final 2 days after I had my second kid.
Wow.
And got done with the associate's degree. And so, I don't know if it was my mom. I think it was my mom. Maybe it was like, did you apply to Gonzaga? And I was like, I can't go to school there. It's a Jesuit school. And I'm this unwedded mother of two, like, they're not going to accept me. But amazingly, they did. Shockingly, they don't ask you that on the application. You know, are you an unwed mother of two? No, but in all honesty, I was really nervous, but I did get accepted. I went to orientation, and the funny thing, I was only a year older than most of the kids, cause I had only taken a year off from school. So it was really weird to go sit in orientation, and I had a car seat with a baby in it. And like, you know, they're everyone's looking at me like, you're the same age, what are you doing here? Yeah, I was like, I'm here to learn. No, but the cool thing about Gonzaga, and I was going to choose accounting. I just hadn't met any of the accounting professors yet, but, I've shared this on, I don't know where else, probably another podcast, but, it was so welcoming. Like every professor told me I could bring my sons to class if I had to. Worked around. By that point, I was working at a local CPA firm in the mornings before school. And then I would go to school, and then I'd pick up my kid from daycare, and then I'd have to go back to school. And I had every single professor in every single classroom was willing to have me bring my kid in. They worked around the group projects to work around my schedule. It was just, I don't know. It was before online school was really a thing. Yeah. But it was, I would have to imagine how people felt when online school became an opportunity for them of like, oh my gosh, I could do this. I could do this. So Gonzaga was kind of the first place I felt like, oh, I could do this. I can build a life. So yeah,
that's awesome.
That's how I landed there.
What was the connection to Sioux Falls?
Oh, so I'm actually in Dakota Dunes. So I'm like an hour and a half south of Sioux Falls. I'm not even in Sioux Falls, but I'm in South Dakota. But, my husband's family all transplanted here from North Dakota.
Okay.
So then there came a point in our lives where we were like, we need to be close to family. Let's just pick up and go. So here we are.
Gotcha. And but then you come back to Spokane. So you went out to Sioux Falls and you come back to Spokane to okay.
Yeah.
I do want to say I truly appreciate your pronunciation of Gonzaga. And this of course we're gonna digress to me because I'm the youngest in my family, and so it's always all about me. I feel like that's the Spokaneite pronunciation. That's how I'm going to submit that that's how all the old timers say it. Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Zay, not Zag. Zaga, Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking Dussault, Spitzer.
Old school. I think
Dane says all the Stockton. Anybody?
Oh, yeah.
There's an old clip of a Bing Crosby ad. He says it that way. And on the website, and I've actually tried to contest this, this is how powerless I am. It says Zag as in bag, which I find acceptable. And people say, well, why do we call them the Zags? I get it. But it's not the true. Then it's not the original. It's not the true, other than the Italian, which is totally different pronunciation. It's not the original. It's a true. So you are number one in my book for a lot of reasons. Among them, your pronunciation of Gonzaga. I want to get that on the record. That's why I wanted
it's,
to.
It's on the record. Well, I'll tell you, in the Midwest, everyone calls it Gonzaga.
I know.
So yeah. I'm just fighting the battle. I'm like, do you ever hear anyone say go Zogs? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. Like, take a step back. It's ESPN's fault. They ruined it way early on. So
100%. It was some damages, I would imagine. You said you had some people from high school. Was Morrison in your class?
He was a year or two younger than me.
Okay.
Right, yeah. So in terms of coming to Gonzaga, I think he probably would have, I would have been starting like my junior year, the equivalent of my junior years when I came into Gonzaga. So he was probably a freshman. I don't really remember, those days were a blur, you know, cause I had little kids, but he was pretty early on. Turioff played. He was in my communications class. Like, awesome. it was OG basketball.
yes. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So now you're in the program. You're probably not living in the dorms, right? You're living at home. You got no. Two little munchkins walking around. Okay.
Yeah.
And accounting's not an easy course of study by any stretch. But tell me a little bit about your experience here and kind of how you got your foot in the door with the firm or wherever you started your career journey.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know how much I can say because I don't work there anymore. So I guess client confidentiality doesn't matter. But I'd already gotten accepted into Gonzaga, and then the public radio, the CPA that was doing the work for them, my ex-mother-in-law had introduced me to that firm owner, and he was sole practitioner, and happened to share office space. So they were two separate sole practitioner practices, but he shared space with the CPA that was doing John Stockton's work. So it became like this really exciting going to Gonzaga. You know, if you're a Spokaneite, Stockton was like, I mean, you grew up with that, right? He was Bing Crosby, and then it was John Stockton. Like, that was like the claim to fame coming out of Spokane. And, you know, we were huge Utah Jazz fans, big Mailman Malone, you know, I mean, all those things growing up as a kid. So in that office, that was my first taste of how cool accounting could be, only because John played in every state or most states. You got to see the complexity of accounting and reporting around his life. And I thought that was so unique to be able to see accounting from a different perspective. So it really helped to have an educational path that really aligned with what I was doing for work, and I could make those connections in real time. And I think that's what made accounting tenable for someone like me that had kids and was trying to work full time and trying to go to school full time. But my work and my school was so interrelated, and it was so easy for me to say, oh, I saw that at work today. How does that work? Oh my gosh, in class, that's what we talked about. Okay, that's what I need to do with that thing. But I did spend my first 6 months, it was right at the beginning of accounting, you know, and you're still learning debits and credits and you don't really understand how trial balances work. And I remember sitting at the office and trying to put in a trial balance and having no concept that revenue is a negative on a trial balance. Like, that, I couldn't figure out, I couldn't get it to balance, right? Like, there was nothing I could do like to figure out how to be an accountant, because I could not put two and two together. So it took a while to get over the hump, but you know, once you sort of get past the numbers part, the rules start to make sense, and there becomes this framework. And as long as you're operating within the framework, it really starts to make sense, and it's its own language. And that was as a result of the professors that I had at GU. They were amazing. You know, not only could I bring my kids in if I had to, they would make special office hours for me to go and see them, even though it was probably really largely inconvenient for them. And they probably had their own families and their own priorities, but they made it work for me. And so I always had access. That was like the number one thing for success there. Like I always had access to bring my best self. And I don't think there's very many, maybe now today in the flexible world that we live in, maybe that's more readily available to students, but at GU 17 years ago, oh, longer than that. I'm looking at the calendar. Dang. A lot of years ago, it was inherent to the way professors approached learning. And that was something that I don't think I could have found anywhere else.
Well, very well said, well put. And I think it's a testament to some of the incredible people we have here in the community and the culture. How are you doing all that with kids? Are you, I mean, if your mom's in town, your parents are in town, they're helping out, I imagine. You got nannies, you got babysitters. What's?
Yeah. I mean, it was like a coalition, right? They always say it takes a village. So, my parents lived in Ritzville. So for those of you that are from Spokane, it's like an hour outside of Spokane, really small town. So that became almost my vacation spot. It was like, I'm going to Ritzville so that my mom can play with the kids and I can do homework, or I can write this paper, or I can just take a weekend and not do school or work and just be. So that was super, super helpful. I don't know how I would have made it through school without her. And then my ex-husband's mom let us move in with her. So then, you know, making dinners and giving baths and things like that, I had help. I had extra hands to do that. Yeah, I don't know how I would have done. I actually look back now. I'm such a little whiner now. You know, all I do is work. My kids are old enough to self-sustain. Two of them are adults, obviously, the first two from college, and my other is 11. So they're self-sufficient. So I don't have to actually keep someone alive anymore. Yeah. But like in my mental space, I'll be like, oh, work was so much. I'm just so busy. I'm just so busy all the time. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, 18 years ago, I was working full-time and going to school full-time and raising two kids and trying to keep my sanity and being a wife. And like, how did I do that? I don't know how I did it. I think we just had a great community we're just really lucky with the people around us to help us get through it.
Yeah. This resonates with me. My mom and with my oldest brother was single mom. I think one time she's working like three jobs, you know, KFC, just trying to patch stuff together. And again, it was a nice woman next door that she would gave her free babysitting kind of thing, you know? And, that's incredible. So and you're working full time, were you working at the accounting firm while you're, okay. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Now getting near the end of your studies at Gonzaga, getting ready to graduate. Did you do a Mac?
Okay. So I was the first year that the 150 hours was required to sit for the exam. Well, not to sit for the exam, but to get my license. And so I didn't do my Mac because I had an associate's degree with extra credits. And then I finished up my bachelor's. I did some summer classes, and then, Gonzaga was just figuring out how they were going to offer the fifth year back then. And so, I don't know. Is Dr. Weber still there? Is he still?
He is. He is.
Dean, is he still dean of the business school?
He's not. So he was he occupied two roles for quite a long time. I want to say maybe over a decade. He was the coordinator of accounting, which is undergrad, and then he was the director of graduate accounting, which is the grad school. He has passed those off. I took over as director of graduate, and then my colleague Matt Hoag is the coordinator. But G Dub is still hanging. He's going to teach this fall and spring, and then he's going to Florence the following fall. And I think that, and this is public, so I can say it, that he's going to move down to Arizona and take on the next challenge. So he'll be retiring after that. So,
oh my gosh, he is a staple of my whole life at Gonzaga. But so in a weird turn of events, I did not know this when I started the accounting program at GU. His daughter and I were friends in high school. She's, I think, 2 years younger than me. And we were in a play together, a musical. And so for a whole semester of high school, I was the only one that could drive out of the group. And she was in my car driving around Spokane for a whole semester of school. And I had never met, like, I did not know that that was her dad and right. that he was a professor at GU. So, so cue the first day of tax and he says, oh, I'm Gary Weber. And then, you know, he puts up a picture of his family and I was like, oh my gosh, I know your kid. Like, this is so weird. Like, and I'm sure he's heard that a million times, right? You have kids in Spokane and then kids from Spokane go to GU. You're going to have somebody in your class. Yeah. But, so for me, I think, post, like, getting ready to graduate, trying to figure out what to do with my life, as I'm sure as your students know now, and many of us that were in the accounting school early on, they recruit, right? The big four recruit hard, and you go to interviews and you go to second interviews, and Spokane is unique. GU students are unique because they get opportunities to maybe choose some different. It's not just where they live then. So I interviewed in Seattle, I interviewed in Portland, and I went with all the big firms, and then I came home and just sobbed because back then you could not work in tax if you didn't have a Mac, or very rarely could you work in tax if you didn't have a Mac. And I was terrified of going into audit because I had little kids. And I was like, how am I going to travel to these client offices and be gone for weeks at a time? Like, that's untenable. And it was really funny when they recruit you, it's a whole cohort. They bring you all in. It was this whole cohort. And they used to send you out with the young staff to show you how fun working there is. And they're like, let's get shots. Let's go to this bar. And I'm thinking, I got to call my three-year-old. I've been away from home for a day, you know, just totally different life situation for me and what I was looking for a career. Because I knew I'd never be the one to go out and party. So I was like, this is irrelevant. I don't care what you guys do in your free time. I won't be with you. I'll be at home. So I went and cried. And I told Professor Weber then, Dr. Weber, I was like, I don't know what to do with my life. What am I going to do? And he actually said, I have a firm in Arizona that you should go talk to. And I did. And they flew me down there and I interviewed with them and I got the job. And so Dr. Weber was directly responsible for my post GU professional leap into accounting. And yeah, best decision I ever made. Right. Like, I was down there. So I'll have to ping him and say, oh my God, you're going back to Arizona. We gotta meet up when I go down and visit my people.
That's awesome. And is that the firm that you're with today still?
Nope. That was Beach Fleischman way back in the day. Very, very first job out of college. They shockingly hired me to do tax, which again was unheard of. But Dr. Weber put his skin in the game and gave me a recommendation. And so they hired me and I worked there for a couple of years. I went to work for a smaller firm out of Phoenix, went there, did tax. Then it was a long drive. And so I took a break and worked for a local firm in Tucson, which I couldn't even tell you what the firm was. So it clearly didn't work out for me. And then I went back to that small firm in Phoenix and actually switched to audit. And so I did audit work and loved that, loved every second of it. But, you know, once you know one thing, you can't ever get out of it. So then I did audit and tax because, you know, you can't ever get away from it if they know you know it. Yeah. And then I landed. I was ready to get out of Arizona. We wanted to be close to family. And so I literally Googled jobs in South Dakota that I was like, thought I was qualified for. And there was one job in our town and it was for a bank, which I had no banking experience whatsoever. All of my work in assurance and tax, none of it had been with financial institutions. And so I put my app in and the CFO called me and we had a phone interview and he was like, I just don't see a lot of financial institution background on your resume. And I was like, no, but I'm a CPA, so I can figure out anything. And they gave me the job. So, I've just been really, really fortunate. Having an accounting background and having a CPA has kind of been the open doors and do what you want. And then, gosh, 3 years ago now, our CEO at BPM we had met each other through an AICPA Women's Initiatives Executive Committee that we both sat on. And I totally idolized him. And he really kind of became a mentor for me anytime I was trying to figure out where to go next and what to do with my professional life. And so I called him because someone else was recruiting me. And he said, "Hey, if you're in the job market, why wouldn't you come work for me?" And I was like, "Well, it would have to be the perfect job." And he said, "Well, what would be the perfect job?" And I said, "Well, I want to transform everything." And he was like, "Great, let's figure that out." So we wrote a job description together. He went and sold it to the board, and I interviewed with them, and they said, "Yeah, let's do this." And so as far as I know, one of the few firms that has a chief transformation officer on the payroll.
So tell me a little bit about the firm. How big, where it's at?
Yeah, so we are at about $260 million. And about 1,200, maybe we're at 1,300, 1,200 colleagues worldwide. We physical presence offices, mostly West Coast. San Francisco is probably our largest physical office, but we have a footprint. We have a, we call it a virtual region of about 680 colleagues. So that's actually our biggest region, biggest group. So they're anywhere that they don't go to an office, they're in the virtual region. So that's all across the US. And then we have a team in Canada, we have a team in India, and we're growing a team in the UK. So lots of exciting growth internationally. So, and we do all things, right? I think they call it in the cliche language, a full service CPA firm. Okay. Do all the things. But we have a great advisory group that's about a third of our practice, and they do everything from software implementation to HR consulting to cybersecurity consulting. We have a group that does M&A work. Like, so anything that you can think of, we have a group that probably does it in our advisory group. So really fun.
That's awesome. You have been named more than once. I know two times, but probably maybe more than that. One of the, correct me if I'm wrong, 40 most influential, powerful women in accounting.
those are multiple lists that are just like bandaged together. But yes, ish, to answer your question. So the official, I think the one you're talking about is the most recent, which is the 25 most powerful women in accounting.
25 most powerful. Okay. I see that. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're very active in the AICPA. Can you talk a little about some of the work you're doing, stuff going on?
At
the national level.
I think, so before I got my license, it took me forever to get my license after I graduated. So I didn't get my license until 2013 and I graduated in 05. So there was like some life detours in there, and some craziness with just getting my exam done and pulling the trigger. So up until that point, that whole 8 years, I was really like a cliche accountant, put your head down, be a technical expert. This is how you're contributing to the world. And it always felt like it fit me just a little bit wrong. And it was really weird because as soon as I got my license, I went to a conference called, now it's Engage. It was Edge way back in the day, which was for like emerging leaders. And it was so, I Googled like training on being a better leader, leading myself, like whatever. And this came up. And so I took it to our managing partner and I was like, "Would you pay for this? Can I go to this conference?" And he was like, "Yep, but you got to bring stuff back." So I went and it was like someone splashed water on my face and I woke up for the first time. And it was really the first time that I found out that you could have an impact on the profession and the world, even if you're only 26 or 28 or 32 or whatever age you are. You don't have to be 18 years into your career to have credibility. And that was, I don't know, just a huge shift in my life professionally. Well, really even personally. So from there, it started there. I went to that conference. I loved a ton of like what people were saying, what they were thinking, what they were talking about was so inspiring. It was so much bigger than just deliver a document to the client. Like it just became so much bigger than that. It was like client experience and colleague experience and how we're changing the world and what we do to make the world a better place. And that got me really fired up. So it kind of started with that. And then you meet people from the AICPA and you get all jazzercised and they're like, "Whoa, you're pretty excited about this stuff." And I'm like, "Tell me where I can sign up to to be part of this. I want to be part of the conversation. I want to know what's happening. I want to know how I can help. And so it just went from there. It was like one committee, like a young members committee, I think I started on. And then pretty soon it was Women's Initiatives Executive Committee. And then it was council. And then it was a bunch of conference planning committees. And now I'm on the board. Which is incredibly humbling. And also, I don't know, I have imposter syndrome. Like every time I get ready to go to a board meeting, like, I'm not sure if they actually know what I do. Like they're like, maybe they don't really want my opinion because these people are so smart. I mean, they're just like such incredibly gifted, smart people. And you're sitting around this table, like, I don't know how I got here, but I'm super excited to be here. So that's kind of been the journey. It's been really fun.
Yeah. Make it till you make it, right?
That's right. just show up and raise your hand. That's pretty much how I get things done.
Are you involved with the South Dakota Society at all, State Society, or is it just, because usually I guess when I envision council at AICPA, I always think state.
State. Yes. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a winding road. So yes. So when I first came to South Dakota, I immediately put in for reciprocity from Arizona, wanted to get involved. I did, got on a couple of like practice group councils. But the interesting thing about South Dakota compared to like Arizona, where I got licensed, is South Dakota is a much smaller population. Right. So the activities are few and far between, just because we get together and you know all 600 people, right? I mean, you almost know everyone that's a CPA in South Dakota, which is unusual in another state, right? You would never know everybody that's a CPA. So I'm still involved with the society, but I took a weird route because of moving in the middle of all that and everything else, that I just was doing it on the national level. And so then I had already signed up for all this stuff and I got wrapped into volunteering at the national level. So I just didn't have the bandwidth to keep doing a lot at the state level. So still involved with them, still try and make it to our annual meetings. I was on the board for a very short stint, but it was right when I joined the AICPA board and I just couldn't balance both of them. It was too much at one time. So, but I'm looking forward to when I retire from the association stuff. I really do love our board. Our society here is fantastic and I love our CEO. So I'm looking forward to kind of reconnecting with all of them and spending more and more time with them.
Awesome. Can you share a little bit about where you think the profession's going? What you think the future of the profession is?
I mean, okay, so I will start by saying the views that I share are only my views and do not reflect the views of either the association or BPM or any other organization that I'm affiliated with. Okay, so now that I've said that and say it officially, we are in interesting times. So I tend to be a glass half full type of person in general. And I believe that we are on the precipice of something really magical in the profession. And I think because higher education is shifting and changing, I think that's a huge, huge motivator for us in the profession to think about how we are going to create a space where educated people want to work and engage. And as secondary higher ed shifts the way they're creating learning space for students, they shift the way they talk about careers, they're shifting even curriculum and curriculum delivery. I think we are at a really cool point in history as a profession to rethink how we engage the new student of tomorrow. And then you mentioned it earlier, what they expect and the lives they want to create. I think it's interesting. You know, there's a group of people who would say this younger generation doesn't want to do anything. They want too much in return for giving too little. You know, there's like a lot of kind of commentary around that. If you go back to 1967, you'll see a very similar article in Reader's Digest about my parents' generation, actually. Yeah. So, but it's interesting because we've created this ourselves, and I'm one of those people, right? So I have kids that are 21 and 22, or 21 and 23, and I spent my whole life telling them how important it was to create boundaries, how important it is to find work that feeds your passion or to find passion in your work. I spent a lot of time telling them how much family matters and trying to create that balance for you and what's important and just being open about it from day one and being empowered to go and say, this is what I need to be successful and working hard 100%, but working hard in a really mentally stable environment matters. So you can't be a complete loose cannon just because you're a really hard worker, because you don't take breaks and you don't create space and you don't make boundaries. So it's interesting because I didn't do those things well. So I told my kids about how they should do that well. And now we're bearing those fruits as they enter the workforce and we're shocked. I can't believe they would make these demands. Like, why do you think they made these commands? They watched you work and work and work and feel undervalued and potentially underpaid. And now they're saying, I won't do that. I saw how unhappy my parents were. I need to make sure that my family comes first and my work allows me to live the life that I choose. We created that. So then it's shocking to me that we're surprised by it because those were the conversations we had at home. So I think that's where we are, not just the accounting profession, but really the workforce at large. I think we have this amazing opportunity to rethink the way we work and it benefits everyone. I mean, that's the crazy thing is that if we do this well, everyone from I'm almost retired all the way down to this is my first day in the workforce benefits from a healthier working environment, from a more balanced approach to how we do business, from really thinking about the whole person and the whole person being at work. We have the opportunity to do that really well. And that's cool to me. Like, I think that's really, really cool. But I think it's really scary to a lot of other people. And it feels not possible. But I think it is. So.
Yeah, there's that knee-jerk reaction, which is natural on some level of change, right? Like, I don't like it. Resist, right? What about technologies? What are you seeing in the role of... And to me, it's like every other Tuesday, something big is coming down the pipeline that's going to radically transform how we do things. So what are you seeing on that front? Or what are you thinking?
It's hard not to be shiny new toy. And then it's also hard not to be, oh, that's just a fad. So there's something in between those two things. So you are right. There is a new technology every time we turn around. And it is always interesting to me. If you go back into history and you watch technology advance, you'll see where there is a really slow curve to any tech that becomes common use. For like 10 to 30 years, that technology is like almost dormant. Stuff is happening, but it's not in the common marketplace, but stuff is happening. And then to the typical consumer, it feels like that technology came out of nowhere and now it's invaded everything and you just can't even cope with it. So it's a really interesting like psychological dynamic with technology because the same has happened with AI. But AI is not new. AI actually like originally was like back in the 70s, right? And then there was work being done in the 80s and like then into the 90s. Nothing from a consumer perspective. And then you get to 2022 and all of a sudden it feels like AI came out of nowhere and like no one saw it coming and oh my gosh, it's influencing everything and it's built into the back end of all these systems and we don't even know what we're using when we're using it. So it's really interesting to think through how do we get better as a profession at really seeing that slow curve ahead of time. And we're really terrible at it. We're not the only profession that's terrible at it, but we are not great. And we wait until it gets to explosion moment. And then we're like, oh my gosh, we have to do something. Oh my gosh, we have to start using this. And the people that are innovators and early adopters go into it and say, okay, how am I going to do this? I need to think this through. How am I going to do this? But the majority of the profession is like, this will pass. This won't be a thing. It's not going to take over anything. Or they're just hoping to ignore the whole thing. Like, I hope I'm out of the profession by the time right. That becomes a thing. Right. So I think that we have an opportunity. You know, we have some arms of the profession that are really into tech. I think it would be really amazing to have some of those teams that really, they really understand the life cycle of a tech to start giving the the road signs of like, here's when we need to start getting into like dev and application. And it's before the big explosion onto the marketplace, but it has to be after a certain period of time, because if it's too early on the curve, everyone's like, see, I knew it would come to nothing. Right. I told you it wouldn't be anything. But we go through this cycle every, I don't know, what is it? Maybe 15 to 20 years. Excel was the last one. Right. I was not around for the beginning of Excel, but I can tell you that when I was just entering the profession, there were still members of the profession who were there for the beginning of Excel. And the stories they told about how many jobs were going to be lost because Excel, that we weren't, accounting was going to go away because Excel was going to do everything that accountants did. We were going to become irrelevant. None of that happened, right? Because we learned to leverage the technology as a tool to make us better at delivering results. So all of this technology that's coming at us with AI, Gen AI, I mean, RPA is old news, but you wouldn't think it in our profession. So all that stuff is, it's not replacing us, right? It's opening up opportunities for us to do different, better work.
Yeah, I like to quote AICPA, I guess his title is CEO and President, Barry Melanson, and he said this at council at one point, but AI won't replace accountants. However, accountants who use AI will replace those who do not.
Yep.
And I think you could interchange, I don't know if whether it's physician or attorney or pretty much any professional into that accountant, or interchange the word. And there's probably some truth to that. You're talking there, got me thinking about blockchain. Mm. And I'm thinking back, or even like maybe when we were in school, IFRS was a big thing. And, oh, we got to get IFRS going. We had classes, and now we don't teach those anymore for whatever reason. And then blockchain, there seems to be a lot of potential with some of the capabilities as far as, you know, warehousing data and not being able to manipulate it and then using it. Different data analytics tools for some of the audit functions. Are you seeing anything with that? And I mean, maybe it's in that dormant stage, like you suggest, but are you seeing anything on that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so in the marketplace, I think, here's where we're at the mercy of other professions to adopt and implement. So some of it is, yes, there's some firms that are doing blockchain assurance engagements already, right? They're going in on some of those early innovators who are using blockchains in their organizations, but there's so few and far between, right? So Walmart has a blockchain that they've built for their vendor vertical. Right. And so there's their supply chain, like that's how they're managing transactions, but it has weak points because it requires the supplier to be in the blockchain. And then they have to understand the technology and they have to have the systems that support the technology. And so like, it takes a really long time to get to the point where you have an active blockchain from beginning to end of transaction that you can actually audit, that you can verify, validate, that you can leverage to pay, receive payment. And then you have the banks in the middle of all that. And they're trying to figure out, like, what does that mean for them? What kind of platforms do they have? So I think some of it is, yeah, I think it was, this is going to be a big thing. And I think those were the innovators that were kind of trying to ring the bell, like, hey, this is coming. It's going to come. It will come. We will figure it out. But it was a little early in the curve, because there was so much that has to be built from an infrastructure standpoint and from a utilization standpoint that now people, like, the shiny has worn off, right? So you got people kind of excited about it and everybody's like, this is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. But it wasn't accessible to the average person. So now it's not shiny and cool anymore. I think it will come back and there will be a tipping point at which all of a sudden some major player in the marketplace will be like, we are all in blockchain and here it is. And everybody else will be like, oh gosh, like that's the gold standard. We got to get there. I think that will probably still come. The thing that makes AI really interesting is it's really the first tech, in my opinion, that was immediately accessible in that moment to the average Joe. So it wasn't actually businesses and infrastructure that started using it first. It was you and I trying to write a rap song for our son's birthday party. Like it was a totally different product evolution. And it started with the individual consumer as opposed to business saying, this is how we could use this. This is how we should leverage it. And instead, the individual consumer has now pushed business to say, oh, holy cow, there's a practical application for this. How do we deal with the security issues, the privacy issues, all the things that individuals don't necessarily think about, but businesses have to. So it was a different evolution of technology with AI that has been actually great because the market is actually forcing business to make changes as opposed to business creating the change in the market.
Interesting. And maybe you can't share on this, but how are you guys leveraging AI in your practice?
So I can share one because I know we've had a press release. So I know it's out in the world. So we are super lucky. We have an internal IT team. They're amazing. We have a ton of talent in that group. And we have an individual in that group that just really loved AI. He was really into it. ChatGPT just went out and just sort of dug in to understand like how algorithms work, how you can build the guardrails, like what it would look like. And he actually came to our tax team and said, would it be helpful if I built you your own basically chatbot that would look at all of the research you're connected to and you could talk to it like your friend? Hey, chat, I have a client, blah, 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 blah. This is what's going on with them. What should I talk to them about? And it will tell you, like, based on what you told me, you could consider this, 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 and this, right? It's like talking to a tax manager or tax partner when you're an A1 and you have no idea what you're even asking. So they built this thing and he went in and it's in our environment. So we can put client data in there because it's completely private and protected. So it's not connected to the internet. And then it's pointed directly at validated sources that we chose. So, right, like IRS code section, specifically revenue rulings. There's probably like some, we use a specific vendor for research. So there's probably some of that vendor stuff that's connected to it. And it has this set of guardrails of like the type of language it can use. And then we have rules that we place around it, right? So that when an A1 says, how do I do a 1031 exchange? It will give them some feedback and then it lists the actual source it pulled from as links that they can go and look at the actual code section, like in the real time. So it's been cool because our team now, we have a group of like A1s, A2s, probably even some seniors, and they use that as basically a real-time resource instead of maybe going to the tax manager and asking them a question. Now they're coming to the tax manager and saying, okay, so I think we should do this and this is how I would treat it. Is that right? And then the tax manager's like, yep, check, let's go. Instead of spending hours like back and forth trying to explain concepts to people who are just out of school, right? And their brains are full of everything that they just learned in 4 years and they're trying to figure out how to apply it. And then it's been super, super impactful for our team outside the US as we skill them up to support our teams and work with our teams. So we have colleagues in Canada and in Bengaluru that may not be super familiar with US tax law. They're accountants and they're working on their CPA licenses, but they're just like students here, right? They have a cap to what they've learned in school and they have immediate access in a different time zone to get real-time answers that we've already vetted and said, yeah, those are good. So super cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Makes things a lot more efficient. And you certainly have the checks in there.
The other, I will say on the back end, the cool part for us as leaders is that they built this chat and it gives us analytics on the back end. So we can see what types of questions are being asked. If there's a trend on like the types of questions, certain keywords, we can look at staff. How often are they using it? So if we have a staff that's never using it and they have 800 review comments, there's a training opportunity for us to have them start using that platform more effectively. So we have all these kind of analytics that can help us drive better talent management and better firm management as a result of what we're hearing from the bot.
Very cool. Very cool. We talked a little bit, you mentioned, you know, incoming staff and we talked a little about some generational characteristics. What's your pitch to the potential staff one about your firm or a career in accounting?
My first would be that I, you know, like I said, I'm the optimist. I'm always glass half full, and I am perpetually a purpose finder. So for me, what would have spoken to me as a college graduate coming into the profession is I really do think that we are at a point in time where you will have a voice and a seat at the table like has never been possible before. Organizations, specifically in the accounting profession, are recognizing the value of a close to market voice that hasn't been in the profession for 15 years, that hasn't done it the same way since they learned it on day one, that has different ways of thinking and learning because they were brought up in a different age, right? They all had access to technology from 5 on, right? Those are the kids that are entering the workforce. They had an iPad before they had a book, right? They could use an iPad before they could read, most of them. So they look at the world different. They look at opportunities differently. And there is a ton of value in that. And organizations are now seeing that. And I think that from a profession perspective, if you like to influence and you like to drive new, this is the time to be in accounting, no matter how you feel about actual accounting. Because accounting is probably going to change anyway, right? It's changed since I graduated. It's changed since you graduated. Like most of our A1s aren't doing the same work that I did when I was an A1 because technology has shifted what we need from them. They think differently. They engage with software differently. I mean, things have changed already. So they'll just continue to do that. So it's really never about the accounting. The accounting is the language that you learn to operate in business. Once you learn that language, the opportunities in the accounting profession are literally endless. And I say that knowing that I don't ever do accounting anymore. I am fully focused on what we can do better as a firm and in the profession. And that is how I spend my time every single day. But I couldn't do that productively or have a real impact if I didn't understand accounting, if I didn't understand the language that all of my colleagues use every day with our clients, with each other. I have to know the language. And I think it's just incredible to me that, I don't know, accounting is just basically that step into the doorway to the unknown and whatever is possible.
Well said. Well said. Now here's, I have a couple very important questions for
you. Okay. I'm set. I'm ready to go.
Okay. First, are you doing any community theater musicals? Are you still, you know, is the passion still there? You want to sing a little something for us?
I am not doing any community theater or musical work, although I did just say we're getting geared up for our transformation team retreat in a couple weeks here. And one of the things that was on there was, what is one thing that you've always wanted to accomplish and you just have never prioritized or had the chance to really think like how you would do it? So it's funny that you asked me that because I literally just filled this thing out and I said, I would love to sing on stage with a live band. Like at some point in my life, like that's on the list. But no, I haven't done that yet. So lots of karaoke though, Andrew, like a massive amount of karaoke.
Good. Yeah. Now, what kind of music? You like country? Swifty? What are we talking about?
I will say, I mean, I like all music. In terms of what I like to sing, it's usually like some soul or classic. I'm a huge Aretha Franklin lover. Teddy Swims song, Lose Control. Like, holy cow. I just like shut out the world and listen to that on repeat.
That's awesome.
Love the sound of that. Yeah.
Second important question.
Okay.
Will the Zags win the national title within the next 5 years?
Listen, I will be the fan that puts Gonzaga as the national champs on every single pre-bracket of every single March Madness fill out for the rest of my life, because it is going to happen. I am like 100% certain the time is coming. The universe is going to coalesce. The stars are going to align. I think UNC robbed us along with the refs, and it should have already been ours. So
Meeks was out of bounds.
PTSD around UNC, which is really funny. I have a lot of friends that are UNC fans, and I'm like, I can't even look at you. I'm just disgusted that somehow it's like rubbing off on you. But in all reality, I actually do think the amount, like the type of talent that comes through Gonzaga and their basketball program is stupid, right? I mean, not just the 5-star recruits and, you know, the ones that are going to go into the MBA after 2 years or whatever, the team they build and like their ability to play as a team is just unprecedented. It just doesn't happen in really most Division I sports. And I think that's the magic, that the secret sauce, and it will happen for Gonzaga.
Because I'm looking up, I saw a fact earlier. GU has the fifth most players in the NBA of all schools, current active players, right? So
that's insane. And think most of those kids weren't five-star recruits. You know, that like it's not just a factory. Like there's just a team feel there that is, I mean, it's consistent with the whole school, right? Like that's how I felt my college experience was, and it's cool that it happens in athletics.
Yeah, and the whole NIL immersion, or the emerging aspect of it, I should say. It had some folks concerned, but looking at the class next year, I mean, it's pretty locked and loaded. So
yeah, seems like it's going to work out just fine.
Yeah. I try not to get too excited because every team finishes on a loss except one. So yeah, just try to control.
I get riled up. It's a roller coaster of emotions, Andrew. I honestly, it's so rough in our house. My husband sometimes won't even watch a game with me because I'm yelling at the TV, which I know does not do any good, but it's so hard to contain it. I want those kids to win so bad.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. Are you superstitious? Do you wear like the same hat every game or anything like that?
Okay, so this is going to sound really messed up, but so last year, I swear they lost every game that I watched, like in the early part of the season.
I've been there.
Yeah. So I just started not watching them, and I would just like click in for like an update on score and then like click out, and then I could like watch the game later. But I was convinced that I was causing the loss. So
probably right. Thank you for making that sacrifice.
Yeah.
On behalf of Zag Nation. Thank you.
I can't watch him because I don't want him to lose because of me.
I've totally been there. All right. Well, one more for, and the one I always ask and one of my favorite ones, any advice you have for new Zags embarking? You've had an incredible journey. And I'll be honest, this is one of the best conversations I've had on the pod or outside the pod. It's been absolutely fascinating. Any advice for new Zags embarking on a career journey and life?
I mean, leverage the faculty at Gonzaga. I mean, I got my first job because of faculty at Gonzaga. I chose to stick with accounting because of the faculty at Gonzaga. In fact, I moved into this role with advice from faculty from Gonzaga, and some of them are not even teaching there anymore. Anyone who tells you that the professors that you see day in, day out, and sometimes you maybe want to puke because you just can't listen to them tell you what to do anymore, they really do have a meaningful impact on the trajectory of your career. And if you don't take advantage of their insights and their networks, and they're all willing to put their capital on the line for you to find success. And I know Gonzaga's, it's a Division I school. It's got like so much power in like the, everyone knows GU. But realistically, it's a small university. It's a tight-knit group. It's a ton of support. And I would not be where I am now without one, having gone through school there with support from professors who let me be a mom and let me be a student, and what they did for me after I graduated. I don't know that there's a lot of other friends that I have that could say that their university was that involved in their life and their growth.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. I'm excited to see where your career continues to take you. You're doing incredible things.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited that you asked me to be here. I'm like, go Zags. I never get to go to like an actual live basketball game anymore. So I have to like live vicariously through your, I'm like, I see a Gonzaga sweatshirt back there. I'm like, yep. I just go Zags.
Let's do it. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, if you're ever around, I mean, it's hard to get tickets. I'm not quite enough of a heavyweight to get people to call me back on tickets. But if you're ever in the area or if there's a Zag game near you, we will try our best. Just let me know.
Oh, you are too kind. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, awesome. Ciao. See you soon.
See ya. Bye.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. It was edited by yours truly, Margie Allgaard. Go forth and set the world on fire. And go Zags. Thank you.